United States versus Armour. I would again note for the record that unfortunately Judge Sparks cannot be here today. However, he will be participating fully on the record. So Captain Fredericks, are you prepared to argue on behalf of appellant?
Yes, sir.
And Major Lee, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Very well then, please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Captain John Fredericks, and alongside my co-counsel, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Abrams, we represent the appellant, Senior Airman Armour. And Chief Judge Olson, I respectfully request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
This court should affirm the military judge for two reasons. The first, because the January 2022 search of Airman Armour's home was unlawful. And the second, because the March 2025 search of Airman Armour's devices unlawfully relied on the poisonous fruits of the search of his home. The military judge made unambiguous and complete findings of fact and conclusion of law that answered those questions for this court. When viewing the facts of the record in the light most favorable to the defense and the military judge's rulings for an abuse of discretion, this court should affirm his suppression of the March 2025 search. Because of the limited briefing special to Article 62 appeals and the complexity of this record, I do want to clarify the timeline a bit and the challenges before this court. On 11 January 2022, Investigator Fleming sought and received a search warrant for subscriber data related to an IP address from a NCMEC hit. That warrant returned a residential address in South Carolina. The defense is no longer challenging that search, as indicated on the last page of our reply. A couple of weeks later, on the 28th of January, 2022, Investigator Fleming conducted a search of Airman Armour's home. The fruits of that search were the identification of Airman Armour's association with that residence. The defense is challenging that search of his home. After the search of his home, there were four other searches conducted related to Airman Armour that included the search and seizure of his devices. At trial, the military judge suppressed the fruits of all of those searches because he found Air Force Office of Special Investigation agents acted with a reckless disregard for the truth. Later, in March 2025, the government attempted to redo those unlawful searches and received a new search authorization to search Airman Armour's devices again. At trial, the military judge suppressed the fruits of those searches, finding that they relied on unlawfully obtained evidence, essentially that the evidence was in government's possession for too long, so it was not of an independent source, failing Murray. The government subsequently filed this Article 62 appeal, and on appeal, the defense has raised what I'm calling a Lincoln issue, that the military judge arrived at the right result, albeit for an alternative reason, because the search of his home was unlawful.
Counsel, there seems to be a dispute about whether it was his home. Your position is that it is, and the government's position is that it isn't, because he wasn't living there and hadn't been there for several months. How do we get to the bottom of that?
We look straight to the record, Your Honor. So the military judge made a finding of fact that the South Carolina residence was where Airman Armour lived immediately before his deployment, and that it was his official residence, at least as of February of 2022. There are further facts in the record that support his finding. One, Investigator Fleming, when conducting the search of that South Carolina residence, she testified that she found Airman Armour's room. She said it had all of his belongings in it, and it was deemed that he did live there. Everything in it had his name, and he had physical paperwork and mailing stuff with his name and address on there. The government filings and their argument at trial indicate that Airman Armour lived there as well. The government agreed that Airman Armour resided there. It's Appellate Exhibit 5, Paragraph 4. Appellate Exhibit 5, Paragraph 70A and 79, they also refer to the residence as Airman Armour's home. Furthermore, the government's entire case relies upon this residence being Airman Armour's home. Otherwise, there's no connection between the NCMEC report and Airman Armour. Yet the government asserts that he did not maintain a reasonable expectation of privacy simply because he deployed. Deployed in October, away from that residence. But the law does not support their demand. They cite a few cases in support of their proposition, the first being United States v. Ayala. They say that Airman Armour only had a residual interest in the property, therefore he didn't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. But Ayala's facts go much further. In Ayala, the appellant there completely abandoned the residence. He took all of his belongings elsewhere. He considered himself to live somewhere else. He didn't have the keys to that property anymore. They also cite to United States v. Quang Tran, where the appellant didn't put forward any evidence of a reasonable expectation of privacy. But here, in the government's own case and with their own witnesses at trial, they put on that evidence that the investigators found that this was his home. He did have a bedroom in that home that he exclusively occupied. They also cite to United States v. Gomez. There, the appellant allowed their brother to take up a lease on their behalf. Those facts don't exist here. What we do have is this court's opinion in 1996, United States v. Salazar, which is directly on point here. There, the appellant was a military service member, occupied a home, which was also occupied by, I believe it was other family members, and there the government ordered him to leave the residence temporarily. Similarly here, Herman Armour did not voluntarily leave his home. The government ordered him to deploy. It was a temporary deployment. He was going to come back home after the fact. He continually and exclusively used a single bedroom in that home, and there's nothing in the record that shows his roommate ever expressed a desire to live separate and apart or objected to him continuing using that residence as his home. Salazar is on point, and that is consistent with Katz versus United States. Herman Armour has a reasonable expectation of privacy in his own home. It is objectively reasonable as recognized in Salazar.
So, Captain Fredericks, I have probably what could be described as a process question rather than a substance question. The gist of your argument, and correct me if I'm mistaken, is that the military judge reached the right result, but for the wrong reasons. And you then say, so we should affirm the military judge's ruling. Why shouldn't we return this to the military judge? Why shouldn't we say, here's the correct legal principles, you need to apply it, plus you then need to move on to issues such as inevitable discovery, you need to look at more closely the issue of standing to challenge, whether fruit of poisonous tree could be stripped from the affidavit and so forth. If we were to decide that right result but wrong reasoning, but simply focus on wrong reasoning, why shouldn't we return it? Rather than what you seem to be asking us to do is simply say, military judge, you're good to go, suppressed.
Your Honor, under United States v. Lincoln, this court is allowed to affirm the military judge's result, which was the suppression of the fruit.
I understand that we're allowed, but I'm saying why would we take that approach in this particular case?
Because the military judge has already made sufficient findings of fact and conclusions of law that allow this court to do it. And it's a very simple end of the sentence for the military judge. The military judge already made a finding that Herman Armour lived at this residence. The military judge already made a conclusion of law that Investigator Fleming recklessly disregarded the truth. With that statement excised, there's no longer probable cause to search the home. And the military judge already found that the benefits of deterring that type of unlawful behavior outweigh the cost of suppression. Those are already all before this court that the military judge has found. And the next sentence is, therefore, the search of the home is unlawful. And so under Lincoln, and as a matter of judicial economy, it would be appropriate for this court to finish that sentence for the military judge.
Isn't the outcome of your challenge to the second search warrant sort of critical to that analysis? If that's what gave the address, right? That's what linked appellant to the residence. Don't we need to know from the military judge whether or not that search is going to stand before we can really determine whether or not that the subsequent searches were lawful?
Yes, Your Honor. And the military judge has already made the sufficient findings to determine that the search of his home was unlawful. And those are the ones I just stated, that he had standing, reckless disregard for the truth, no probable cause to search the home, benefits of deterrence outweigh the cost of exclusion. That's all that this court needs to find that the search of the home was unlawful. That's all that's required under MRE 311. And because all of those have already been met, under Lincoln, the military judge has met his burden, this court reviews that for an abuse of discretion, the court would then analyze the second search, the March 2025 search under Murray, and determine whether the fruits from that initial unlawful search of his home were utilized, whether they, one, affected law enforcement's decision to seek the warrant, or two, affected the search authority's decision to grant it. It's the government's burden to prove that it didn't, and they failed to do so on both prongs.
May I please ask about two additional facts concerning the search of the home, both of which the government addresses. What about the fact that the DMV records already linked appellant to that house? That's one of the facts. And then secondly, in the second search warrant, the language wasn't as clear. It said it was associated it had that word associated with the TIC account as opposed to uploading. Just the specific wording of the first one, which made it defective. Could you address both of those facts?
Yes, Your Honor. For the DMV search, I have two responses to that. One is that the DMV search is a fruit of the unlawful search of the home. The government argued this at trial, making the nexus between the two. At the transcript, page 92, lines 3 to 8, the government argues, and so it's upon the search that Investigator Fleming comes to realize that the roommate has another roommate, Airman Armour. She sees the second bedroom. She sees appellant's name all over everything. At that point, once they realize, yep, there's someone else here, here's the name we have, she runs the additional checks, which tie her back to the name, and again, Airman Armour. It is only by exploiting the fruits of the unlawful search, the identity of Airman Armour being associated with that address, that they then conduct the DMV search. Furthermore, if this court does find that the DMV search is not a fruit of that poisonous search of his home, it is still not a sufficient independent source. When we look at the independent source doctrine, we take away the untainted information, which would be the packages, really the references to Airman Armour. The only reason they do the March 2025 search is because they identified Airman Armour from the unlawful home search. But if the DMV search is all that is left, the military judge already made a finding of fact that the only connection of Senior Airman Armour to the residence associated with the NCMEC IP address hit was from a package found during the search of Airman Bailey's home on 28 January 2022 and an undated search of the South Carolina Department of Motor Vehicles without reference to the dates of his residence there. So if the DMV search is all that's left, they just know that that was his residence as of February of 2022, a search that was conducted 7 months after the alleged misconduct. There's no evidence in the record or in the affidavit that show that the same people are living there at the time of the search that were at the time of the alleged misconduct. So the DMV search, one, fruit of the poisonous tree, if you don't find that to be so, it is not a sufficient independent source. The search authority would not have been able to find probable cause if that's all that they had.
The other question was about the word associated with.
So with the word associated, the actual language, we did at trial challenge that was also made with a reckless disregard for the truth and that there wasn't sufficient probable cause. Before this court, though, the only question is not directly to the language, but it's whether the Murray prongs have been met. So the first was law enforcement affected by the unlawful fruits to even seek out this warrant. How they describe the language in the warrant isn't applicable to that first prong. They were affected by the identification of Airman Armour. Because of the search of the home, they knew to search Airman Armour's devices, they knew to do the DMV search, and they included the package. So first prong, they can't meet. The second prong, the word associated might go a little bit to it, but it's whether the search authority was actually affected by those fruits. Again, this is where we take out the untainted information. Part of the tainted information would be that language of the associatedness. They would not know that the IP address was associated with the residential address and therefore Airman Armour without the unlawful search of the home. So the specific language in the March 2025 affidavit isn't necessarily important. It's whether tainted information was included at all in the affidavit. And here it was. Because the search authority would have no nexus to search Airman Armour's devices unless they knew that he existed in relation to that. And so this court is able to affirm the military judge's suppression because he already made all of the requisite findings of fact and conclusions of law for this court to find that the search of his home was unlawful. The fruits of that search were the identification of Airman Armour. That certainly affected law enforcement's decision to seek a warrant. It's the only reason they sought a warrant in March 2025 for his devices, and the search authority could not have found probable cause unless Airman Armour was also identified. Therefore, this court should suppress the fruits of the March 2025 search. Unless there's any other questions.
I see no questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Major Lee.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Kate Lee, and along with Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, we represent the United States. Society's interest in the truth is why suppression of evidence is a last resort that requires extensive litigation. Despite this, appellate now asks this court to exclude evidence of child pornography offenses on a ground for which the military judge never made findings of fact and never made conclusions of law. This court should decline to do so for two reasons. First, appellant never put on evidence establishing that he had an expectation of privacy in BB's house, which means the trial court had no basis for concluding that his Fourth Amendment rights had been violated. And second, even if this court disagrees and finds that he did meet that burden, The trial court's ruling contains no legal conclusions or factual findings which would allow this court to exclude the evidence and find that appellant's Fourth Amendment rights had been violated. Now, Your Honors, I want to start by addressing some of the questions that you had for my counsel across the aisle. Judge Max, you asked, how do we get to the bottom of whether appellant lived at Four Beard Drive? The answer, Your Honor, would be for appellant to have put on that evidence at trial. The law places the burden on the accused who is challenging a particular search to put on evidence, especially when the government's response to a suppression motion has explicitly challenged his standing to challenge a search. At that point, the accused is on notice. Appellant was on notice that he needed to put on evidence to prove that he maintained a reasonable expectation of privacy at his residence. The government is certainly not contesting that he lived there prior to deploying or that he might actually have had a reasonable expectation of privacy. But the point, Your Honors, is that it was appellant's burden to prove that he maintained that expectation of privacy, whether it's by testifying, as this court noted in Flores, an accused may testify about the circumstances of a search without incriminating themselves in order to establish the requisite facts for a particular result. However, he did not do so here in this case. There's no evidence that he continued to live there. For all we know, Your Honors, he may have moved his things out of Four Beard Drive, out of Beebe's house, into storage with no intent to return. And he might have been receiving packages there because he forgot to update a subscription address or because other people didn't know that he was no longer there. The point is those possibilities remain, and there are no factual findings in the record in the judge's ruling from which this court can conclusively conclude that, yes, he had a reasonable expectation of privacy there. And, Your Honor, this goes to your question about the process. Why shouldn't we return this to the trial court and tell them to apply the correct legal principles? Your Honor, that is absolutely the correct result. For this court to reach the result that appellant is asking for, it would have to make at least 7 different findings based on an underdeveloped record. It would have to find that appellant had a reasonable expectation of privacy in Beebe's house, despite the inconclusive evidence of that. Second, it would have to find that law enforcement recklessly disregarded the truth or had falsities in the affidavit for that house. Then it would have to find that that affidavit would not have PC without those statements. Then this court would also have to find that the information that appellant lived with Beebe at some point, which is used in the March 2025 affidavits, is fruit of the poisonous tree when there are no findings of fact about that either. Then this court would also have to find that the affidavits from March 2025 would also have no PC if all those references were excised. And then this court would have to find that the information that appellant lived with Beebe wouldn't have inevitably been discovered. And then finally, this court would have to find that the use of the word associated is the type of patently unconstitutional misconduct that warrants excluding evidence of 532 items of child pornography. Your Honor, the fact that the affidavit uses associated, which really just means related to, and is a fair characterization of the evidence that was before the civilian investigator at that time, is absolutely important. The military rules of evidence contemplate a procedure taken from the Supreme Court's decision in Franks for determining whether or not something in an affidavit is actually a false statement that was made intentionally or with reckless disregard for the truth. And that absolutely matters, and that's why, because the judge never reached that aspect of these affidavits, this court simply does not have enough to rule the way appellant would like. And, Your Honor, Judge Hardy, this goes to your question. Don't we need to know whether the search will stand before we determine whether the subsequent searches were illegal? And this is precisely what we're getting at with respect to the absence of any litigation regarding the use of the word associated, whether that's in fact false or reckless disregard for the truth. All of those things matter. And because we don't know what the judge would have actually found, remand is absolutely the correct answer, Your Honor. Because appellant's desired result is for this court to essentially skip the Franks procedure and preemptively terminate a child pornography prosecution on an underdeveloped record. And that's absolutely not the right result in this case. The Fourth Amendment The application of the Fourth Amendment is a fact-intensive procedure, and the lower court, at the Air Force Court and this court are not able to make findings of fact and are bound by the findings of fact made by the judge unless they're clearly erroneous in the posture of a 62 appeal. And here we simply don't have enough findings for this court or the lower court, which is exactly why they which is no doubt why they skipped or didn't address this alternate ground for relief. And so this court, I think remand is absolutely the right answer. And to Your Honor's point, like, there had appellant, if this were to go back down, an appellant were to present additional evidence to prove his reasonable expectation of privacy, the government at that point would then have an opportunity to present evidence to support an inevitable discovery argument, et cetera, et cetera. And those are things that the government should be able to do because the government and society writ large has an interest in effective law enforcement. It's why the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule has exceptions in the first place, because it's not designed to compensate the criminal, but it's designed to ensure better law enforcement in the future. And to the extent that the law enforcement behavior in this case is at all concerning, that's something that the lower court should have a chance to address and something that the government should have a chance to address, because saying that the IP address, a residential IP address, was associated with the suspect's Kick account was a fair inference given the facts of this case. The same account that logged into a residential IP address is the same account that uploaded repeatedly child pornography before and after logging in from that residential IP address while using virtual private networks, which are intended to mask physical internet connections like a residential IP address. So based on those facts, Your Honor, it was absolutely fair for the civilian investigator to say that the IP address was associated. But this, is, of course, was not fully litigated at the lower level. And so the government would ask that this court remand, while affirming what the Air Force Court found about the independent source doctrine, so that the trial, the parties at trial can fully develop this issue. And while it may come back to this court at some point, that is the orderly administration of justice. And that's how, if upon ultimately gets to the result he wants, the right way is to remand and litigate and raise it appropriately. Barring any further questions, Your Honor.
Any questions? Thank you, Major.
Can you clarify? It sounded like your initial position was that the appellant had the burden of proof to show that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the home, and he didn't meet that, and so therefore there was no error. But then you now say that we should remand the case. Would he now have a second chance to prove a reasonable expectation of privacy, or has the opportunity for that come and gone?
Yeah, I think that would largely fall on to the discretion of the trial judge, should the trial judge allow appellant to raise another motion to suppress. But yes, you're absolutely correct in that our position is that there was no error because he failed to meet his burden of proving a reasonable expectation of privacy, which means as far as the trial court was concerned, as far as the Air Force Court was concerned, and as far as this court is concerned, there is currently no valid Fourth Amendment challenge to the search of BB's house in front of any court. And so the military judge's silence, the Air Force Court's silence on that matter is not error, because a court may reject without comment a grounds for relief that is not meritorious at that particular time. But should this court remand, which ultimately is the right result in this case, perhaps the trial judge will give appellant another opportunity, perhaps not, and that'll be up to the trial judge. But we certainly don't think that terminating the proceeding by excluding evidence at this level is the right result.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Major Lee. Captain Fredericks?
Your Honor, I have 2 points for rebuttal. The first, that the findings of fact made by the military judge here are sufficient to find that Airman Armour had standing. He already found that it was his residence. The government has already argued that it is his home. The government's entire case relies upon Airman Armour's home being at the South Carolina residence. That is enough to show standing. Investigator Fleming testified for the government at trial to say that this was his bedroom. It was deemed that he did live there. That was the appearance he gave at the time of the search. Just because he deploys does not deprive him of that Fourth Amendment protection of his own home. The government also argued that the association...
Counsel, on that point, I think it's the government's position that they're not disputing that he used to live there and that he lived there at the time the Internet activity occurred, but that we don't know what happened once he deployed. Did he move all of his stuff out? Was he still paying rent? Was it just an accident that packages were still coming to his house at that particular time? In other words, I understood the government to be saying, we don't dispute that he did live there, but he didn't meet his burden to prove that at the time the search was conducted that he still had an expectation of privacy there.
I would disagree with the government's reading of the record, Your Honor. The investigator Fleming clearly stated that she found his bedroom that had all of his belongings in it. It was a room that he exclusively maintained throughout his deployment. He wasn't ordered to a permanent change of station or to vacate the residence completely. When the investigators did a search of the home, they said, oh, this is someone's bedroom. It has everything in it. We think he lives here, and that's the reason why they started investigating him. There is sufficient evidence in the record to find that this was his home. It deserves Fourth Amendment protections that aren't just gone because he took a couple of his electronics and his uniforms to go and deploy. And the government then went further to say that the inference that Investigator Fleming made with the IP address using the language associated was enough. The military judge already found that that was not a fair inference. He made the conclusion of law specific to that affidavit that she already acted with a reckless disregard for the truth. And he made the rest of the findings that this court could use to find the search of the home unlawful. Probable cause ceases to exist when you take out the link, and the benefits of deterrence outweigh the cost of exclusion. The government also spoke about the exceptions to the rule. They've had every opportunity at trial, the Air Force Court, and before this court to raise good faith or inevitable discovery, and they haven't, even though this same challenge to the search of the home has been brought up at every single level. The government's failure to do so is an indication they don't see that that applies. The issue has been fully litigated already, and the government hasn't raised those exceptions. So the military judge has made sufficient findings of fact and conclusions of law that allow this court under Lincoln to finish the sentence, to affirm his suppression of the March 2025 search. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Court stands adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.